Okay, it looks like I'm doing lots of shows today, so this is number three of several. I'm going to stop in an hour and a half, but this is a grounding and earthing conversation, and that's one of the critical factors in maintaining good health. It's being missed by mainstream medicine. It's being missed completely. So I want to play this. It's about an hour and a half. I'm just going to play it through. It's the guy who came up with the earthing idea. I've previously posted the earthing movie, which is a slightly more produced version. But this is the guy who came up with the idea, talking about the idea. So it's on the Sangam Talks channel on YouTube. If you want to take a look, I'll post the link in the show notes. Here he is. Clint Over is his name.
Thanks for making arrangements and having me on the show. I really appreciate that. I never know really quite where to start, but most people want to know, well, how did you come up with this? And I grew up on a ranch environment in Montana. And we raised cattle. And when I was very young, I was a cowboy. And that's a boy who sits on a horse. It's not the romantic cowboy that you see in Western movies. But anyhow, when I was young, I was taught to babysit a herd of cows. And what you're looking for is a cow in the pasture. If there's any cow that isn't looking proper, I mean, he's not acting, or he or her not acting the same as the rest of the herd, meaning they have glassy eyes, or they're bawling, or there's something wrong. Then we would take them out of the pasture, put them in a holding pen, and then first thing we would do is ride out the pasture and make sure there's no noxious weeds, make sure the water is okay, go upstream, make sure there's not a dead animal upstream. But anyhow, the concept that I was taught very young is if you keep the pasture clean and pristine, then the animals will have health. And if the animals are healthy, then you can make a living. Otherwise, if the animals get sick and they have to call a doctor or the veterinarians, then you have to toss the keys up in the air or call the banker, toss the keys up in the air and say, hey, you guys own this. We're out of here because there's no way you can make any money if the animals get sick. So the reason I bring that up is because I've always had this prevention bent. If there's something wrong, then what's causing it? Not what do I take to make me feel better? It's something in the pasture is not right. So anyhow, I spent many years in that environment. And then when I left, I was enamored by the cable television industry back in the early 60s. And in the town I lived in, we had one or two TV stations. And with the advent of cable television, we could bring in television signals from adjacent towns, or eventually we could get them off satellite and so on. So that really appealed to me because all of a sudden the world was bigger than Billings, Montana, the town that I grew up in. And I could see, you know, how people were in LA, the news in LA or Atlanta, or sporting events around the world. And then eventually, with CNN, the world became very, very small. We all could see each other and communicate and interact. So that was, I was just totally enamored with that. And I loved the concept of television. And it's a double-edged sword, you know. It has all the benefits and all these opportunities, but there's also, you know, the other side of it, which sometimes the influences are a little not what you want. But anyhow, I spent about 30 years in that industry. And in that industry, you have to, what they call, ground all of the electrical equipment. You have to, and I'm sure it's that way in India too. And then before you go into a house, you have to have a ground rod driven in the house, in the ground, where they connect the cable to it and then run it into the house and connect it to the TV. The reason for the ground rod is, when you have cable TV lines in the air, then the wind blows and it'll create static charges on them. And so there's electrical charge, or there can be lightning in the air, and that lightning will travel on those miles of wire in the air. And if you don't ground it, then it could go into the house and blow up a TV set. More concerning is it can cause a fire. That's the number one reason that you ground, is to maintain the electrical stability of the system and to keep everything safe and to prevent fire. And in the early days, most of the big fires were caused from electrical events. So, and lightning will start fires and so on. So anyhow, that was the concept behind all of it. But in 1984, I think I was 50 years old, let's put it that way. I ended up with an infection from an abscess from a dental root canal, and it ended up in my liver, and it created a problem in my liver, an abscess in my liver. And anyhow, was going to the doctor for a few months, and finally they couldn't figure out what it was, because it was, they thought it was hepatitis, but they didn't register that way. But anyhow, I got very sick one evening, and they took me to the emergency room, and they put me in a CAT scan, and they saw that I had an abscess in my liver. And so they drained the liver that right while I was in the CAT scan, actually. And so the next morning, a doctor comes in. He says, well, we've got some good news and some bad news. The good news is that we found out what is going on with you. And they said, you have an abscess. And he said, and they asked me if I had been bit. And I said, no. And they asked if I had any dental work. And I said, yes, I had a root canal. And they said, well, some bacteria from your mouth in that area has gotten into your system and it's settled in your liver, and your health wasn't good enough at the time to fight it off. And so anyhow, it ended up destroying most of my liver. And so the good news was that they found out what it was. The bad news was that they didn't know if I could survive it, because so much of my liver had been damaged. And so they told me I needed to go home, get my house in order in case, prepare for, because I was young enough to get a new liver, but there are just not a lot of new livers on the market. So anyhow, a couple of days later, I did go home after a few days, and I was at home, and they would send a nurse out every day to had IVs and all kinds of antibiotics and so on. And anyhow, a young surgeon called, and he said they'd like to do some experimental surgery. So I said, I don't have anything to lose. So anyhow, they went in and they cut out, I think it was 5/6 of the main lobe of my liver. And then I survived. I came out of it. And but there was no guarantees at the time. But anyhow, so a few weeks later, I ended up back home. And it took me about a month to be able to really walk, around the block, around the house. And about 6 months, my liver had fully recovered and fully grown back to its original size. And so it's remarkable that the body is capable of doing that. But anyhow, that's kind of what took me out of the business world, out of the cable, out of everything, because I almost died. And when you go through that, I could tell all kinds of stories that went on with it. And it's very personal. But during my recovery, I was laying in bed one morning and I was looking around my house. In my bedroom, I love art, and I've collected a lot of art. And I had a nice big home. I was very successful and all that kind of stuff. But anyhow, I was looking around the room and I realized that I almost died. And if I would have died, then what would have happened to all these possessions, all these things that I spent my life collecting? And I recognized for the first time that I didn't own any of this stuff. It all owned me, because I brought it into my home. I had to build a bigger home. I had to have more stuff, but I was taking care of stuff. My life was about stuff. And so this epiphany came through, and I called my children and I said, "You can please come and get whatever you would have taken had I died." And I said, I gave away absolutely everything I owned except two suitcases of clothing and things that I could put in an RV. And I spent 4 years driving around the United States, national park to national park, just spending time in nature because that's where I felt best. But the main thing is, I didn't want to go back to work in the business world. I didn't want to go back to, you know, work chasing money. I remember saying to my, when you come close to death, it's a very personal thing and it's just you. There's no one else there. And so you kind of look back on your life. Who am I? Who was I? What did I do? Was my life worthwhile? And that's kind of what came to me. And then, so I had this thing in me that I wanted to make my life about something bigger and better and not about money. I wanted to make my, so when I die next time, I can be happy with myself, not with anybody else. Don't care what anybody else in the world thinks, but I could be happy with myself. And so that was my journey. And so I spent 4 years driving around the United States in these parks. And then I was parked down at Key Largo, down in Florida, a town. And one night, I mean, every night I would go out and it was on the Gulf of Mexico. So I would go out at night and watch the manatee or watch the sunset across the bay. But you're really in nature. I mean, there's, you know, it's just pure nature down there. And so one night I was standing there and I had this feeling come over me. Was, you know, to become an opposite charge. Didn't know what it meant. To become an opposite charge to me would be to go poke people and stir them up and get them to do something. And then, so I went in the bus or in the RV that night and I wrote that down. And then I also had this feeling come over me like status quo is the enemy. It made no sense, but I wrote it down. I still have the paper 23 years later. So anyhow, I just had this urge come over me. It was like all of a sudden I went back outdoors and I was just looking at the bay and I had this urge that nature or something bigger than me was talking to me. And I felt this urge that I had to go back to the West where I was from, California and Montana, that area. And I didn't know what it was. So I got on my bus a few days later and I drove back to California, didn't like it there, went to Arizona, ended up in a little town called Sedona, Arizona, which is kind of a tourist town now. But anyhow, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I had to go back and do something because spending time as nature is fun. Playing with the campers at night is fun, but I had to go and do something. So I was spending time in Sedona, Arizona, and in order to, I hate to drag this on like this, but it's kind of how this all came about. And I think it'll make sense. But anyhow, I spent a little bit of time helping some art galleries there light their art because I had a lot of knowledge about art and lighting. And it was just a hobby and it was service, free service to entertain myself. But anyhow, one day I had a computer that I was trying to order some equipment on, started to crash. And I realized that there was static electricity. So I had to, every time I would touch the computer, it would glitch and go and it would shut down. So I'd have to restart it. And it was really getting to be a pain. So I went on, I got a piece of copper tape, put it across my desk, connected it to a ground outlet. And then I would touch the tape before I touched my computer and to solve the problem. And so that got my mind thinking. And so right after that, I went outdoors, sat on a bench, and up pulls a big tour bus. And it was full of tourists from, I believe they were from Japan. But anyhow, they were all wearing kind of a white, bright white Nike type tennis shoe. And for some reason, intuitively, something came to me. I just said, I wonder if there's a consequence that us humans are, we're no longer naturally grounded. When I was a kid, we were barefoot all the time. The only time we wore shoes was to go to church, go to school, go to some event. And as soon as we were home, we would lose the shoes. We were pretty much barefoot. And I didn't know what to do next, but I just wanted to answer that question. So I went home that night, and I took some electric meter out of my tools, and I went around and I started measuring the difference, the electrical potential on my body versus the electrical potential of the earth, which is something I know something about because of all my years in grounding. And hardly anybody else would even know what I'm talking about. But that night, I would go through the house and I would see that you do create a lot of static electricity on your body when you walk around, if there's carpets, if you have shoes on and carpets and so on. And then you have all these EMFs or electromagnetic fields that are radiating from the wires in the walls and plugs and appliances and those things. But anyhow, you can take a voltmeter grounded to the earth and walk around the house and measure, just hold it in your thumb, and you can read the meter and read the charges, the voltages that are on your body. And then when you ground, obviously they go away. So you put your feet on the earth or on the ground, then they're gone. So this really intrigued me. So that night I went to the hardware store and got a 3-inch roll of metal duct tape, aluminum type, laid it across my bed, connected it to a wire that went out the window, connected it to a ground rod, and then I would lay on the tape, and then I would take the meter and test to make sure that I was grounded, because as long as I was grounded, the meter would read zero. If I was ungrounded, then I would have all this extraneous voltage on my body. And so I thought, didn't know what to do about it, but anyhow, while I was testing it, all of a sudden I fell asleep. Next morning I woke up and the meter was by my side. And I said, wow, there's something going on here, because normally I don't sleep. At that time, I was in my 50s and around 54. And I'm now 77, going on 78 real quick. But anyhow, I noticed that I slept better. And I grounded myself for a couple more nights, same thing. Then I grounded one of my friends in the neighborhood who would sit around and talk to each other quite a bit. And I said, you know, you need to try this. So I went and put it on his bed. A couple, 3 days later, he came back. He says, do you think this could be affecting my arthritis? I said, no, I think it just helps with sleep. And then he said that his arthritis was way down. And I recognized that my pain was way down. Because I grew up a cowboy. I've spent a lot of my life skiing, riding horses, doing a lot of dumb things, tennis, whatever. But I had a lot of injuries. And, you know, 50 years old, most men are, you know, they've run up against the wall so many times, they've got aches and pains and bruises everywhere. But anyhow, I didn't know what to do with that. Back then, we didn't have much of an internet. We had mostly AOL and telephone lines. And so I went on the internet trying to find out why grounding affects the body. There was nothing in the literature. I went down to University of Arizona in Tucson, and some friends there, they were medical type. I said, you know, can you explain it? Is there any information on this anywhere? And nobody could find anything that would suggest that grounding the body would affect the body in any way, let alone pain. And so anyhow, I struggled for a period of time trying to find out. And then finally I said, well, I think I'll just go out to UCLA in California, the Elmo, because it's a big university, a big medical university. And so anyhow, I went there and they listened to me. And I said, you know, I want to do a study on this or something, you know, because people need to know about this. This is important. And they pretty much laughed me off campus. They said, you're crazy if you expect us to believe that somebody's going to tie a wire around somebody's toe, stick it in the ground, and they're going to sleep better. They said, get out of here. You're nuts. But anyhow, we joked around after that, and they didn't really understand anything about the electrical aspects of the body. And at that time, I knew very little about the biological effects. So anyhow, shortly after that, I went to Ventura, California, and I designed a study with the help of a couple of the students from UCLA. And we had a study where we had 60 subjects, 30 of them were grounded, 30 of them weren't. And we verified that grounding the body at night, you slept better, it reduced pain, you felt better. And then we also got lots of reports back about, especially from women, TMJ, menstrual cramps disappearing, all kinds of, just a plethora of different things. And I remember one person said, well, this can't be a cure-all. And I said, I don't think it's a cure-all, but I think it may be a cause-all, meaning that we are no longer naturally grounded. And then all of these health disorders are beginning to manifest. So anyhow, I did publish that study. And it was more of an anecdotal study. Then I ended up doing a study with a doctor in San Diego where we measured cortisol secretion. That's your stress hormone. And so what we found was before grounding, everybody's cortisol was, you know, like spaghetti. They were all over the place. And so we grounded everybody. And 6-8 weeks later, we measured cortisol every 4 hours for 24 hours before every 4 hours, 24 hours after. The cortisol normalized into a nice rhythmic band afterwards, and before it was all like spaghetti. And so what we recognized more than anything was at 4 o'clock in the morning, cortisol begins to spike when you're grounded. It does anyway, but it's really elevated. And that's what allows you to get out of bed in the morning and have good energy when you get up. And anyhow, we saw very clearly that grounding had something to do with normalizing hormone secretions. And then we were going to expand that study, but everybody got excited and said, well, let's go study this, let's go study that. So over a period of 20 years now, we have produced almost 30 papers. Most of them are peer-reviewed published studies that collectively demonstrate that when you are grounded, it reduces inflammation and pain. And most people aren't aware, and I wasn't aware at the time, that if you have pain, you have inflammation. You cannot have pain without having inflammation. So if there's any inflammation in your joints or anywhere in your body, then it'll manifest as pain. So pain is the message to the brain that, hey, I'm on fire, get me out of here. So, but anyhow, the big problem was back then we learned that grounding reduced the pain, but we didn't know anything about inflammation. Nobody did. 20 years ago, the word inflammation was not even in the literature. So about 2004, there was a cover on Time Magazine was the word inflammation, and it showed a body, and it showed the body on fire. And it said, in summary, it said, basically, you don't have all of these health disorders that we name. You don't have arthritis, lupus, cancer, so on. What you have is chronic inflammation, low-grade chronic inflammation, and this inflammation manifests differently in different people based on their lifestyle and their genetics. Based on, you know, their health habits, their food, the inflammation is the fire starter that promotes all of these modern health disorders. The problem at that time was we did not know how grounding affected inflammation. So we spent the next 5 or 6 years, and it's hard to believe that it takes that long, but when you realize that there's been less than 20 years that anybody knew the word inflammation. So, but anyhow, we started looking at how could electrons, I mean, when you touch the earth, your body, I mean, the earth has an abundance or I'm challenged sometimes to explain it, but it's like the ocean. When you get in the ocean, you get wet all over your body. Okay, well, when you touch the earth barefoot, then the electrical energy of the earth is absorbed into your body, all over your body, throughout your body, and you actually radiate an electric field, the earth's electric field, when you are standing barefoot on the earth. As soon as you put shoes on, it's gone. We understood that, but we didn't understand how grounding affected inflammation until one day I was working on a study and we were talking about how pain is caused by neutrophils. Neutrophils are a white blood cell that the immune system sends to site of an injury, or if you have a pathogen in your body, and it will go over and wrap itself around the pathogen or the damaged cell, and it will start ripping the electrons away from it and destroy it. That's how the body destroys pathogen. That's how it destroys bacteria. And so anyhow, in the process, if you have an excess of reactive oxygen, I mean, the neutrophil wraps itself around and releases this reactive oxygen that rips the electron. So once the pathogen has been destroyed, if you don't have enough free electrons or redox potential or ground to reduce those excess radicals, then they will attack an adjacent cell, steal an electron from it, and it will send out a message to the immune system. The immune system sends another neutrophil, and so you have a chain reaction. And then this eventually it's collateral damage and it's continuous. So it's like a log on fire. It's like starting a fire and the fire is burning. And the only thing that we could make sense of is as soon as we grounded the body, then that process stopped. And so then we knew that it was the excess radicals from the neutrophils that were causing the inflammation and eventually the pain or the problem, the health disorder. And then we recognized that when the body is grounded, it's flooded with free electron. And then if you have free electrons in your body, then they automatically, instantly neutralize these excess radicals. And that prevents inflammation. So with my background of grounding to prevent fire, inflammation is fire. Inflame, body is inflame. It is on fire, literally. Even though it's a very low smoldering fire, it's still a fire. So I kind of recognized that, okay, we're just grounding the body. And then I started to look back in time and I realized that before 1960, we were all barefoot. I mean, you know, we lived outdoors. We didn't, you know, television came along in the 50s. And people started spending more time indoors, of course. And then late 1950s, we started wearing tennis shoes, the kids type tennis shoes. And then in the 1959, they invented polymers. That's only 60 years ago. We invented plastics 60 some years ago. And since then, the number one thing we did with plastics is we put them on the soles of our shoes. We put carpets in our home. We put plastic flooring in our homes, and we live in a plasticized world. I don't know, it's different in different countries and different cities and environments, but basically, we have insulated ourselves from the earth over a period of 60 years completely. And if you go back to 1960, you can see that diabetes, autism, lupus, MS, cancer, all of these, they were like, you know, 1 in 10,000. And today they're 1 in 40 or 1 in 50. So anyhow, you have an exponential curve. That's the increase in autoimmune disease is skyrocketing, and it still is to this day. And so what we have learned and all of our work and all of our studies is we take the shoes off or we ground people in their home, then it puts the fire of inflammation out, and then the immune system is not spending its energy fighting the fire of inflammation that it is creating because it's ungrounded. Now the immune system can go back to work and do the things that it normally does, which is return the body to normal every day. mean, the body is a self-healing mechanism. I mean, it is your immune system that keeps, your immune system is who you are. You take care of your immune system, you're going to have health. If you don't have health, I don't care who it is, if you do not have health, then something you're doing is interfering with your immune system's ability to maintain health.
There you go. That's the basic principle of it. I'm going to break this into three parts because it's an hour and a half, or an hour and 35 minutes. So that's the end of part one. I shall be back later on with part two. I'll post three different audios, but at least it'll be bite-sized enough that you'll get the idea. And it's just a matter of going out into the garden, taking your shoes and socks off, basically. It's not rocket science. Just do it, see if it makes a difference. And if it does, keep doing it. That's it. You want to be healthy? Take your shoes and socks off. All right, that's it for me for now.